bars. He's got a few scars, stays higher than Mars, and makes love in cars. His wig isn't neat, and cars he's a cheat. He drinks Sneaky Pete, and don't eat no meat. And all the time you hear the women really calling his name, Filthy McNasty. He don't own a suit, a Nero or Zoot. He never has loot, except in his boot. His body is lean, his feet aren't clean. His mouth is real mean when he's on the scene. But all the time you hear the women really yelling his name, Filthy McNasty.
That's Eddie Jefferson, the great Eddie Jefferson. You remember him with Filthy McNasty. It was one of his greatest hits, by the way. It's from his 1968 album, Body and Soul. James Moody on tenor sax and flute, Dave Burns on trumpet, Barry Harris on piano, Steve Davis on trombone, and Billie Jean English on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And it is Free Your Mind Friday. We have so much to talk about, and this is our turn to open up the phone lines at 888-874-4888 to hear what you have to say about the issues of the week, and there are so many to talk about. Or maybe you want to take the conversation someplace else. It's your call at 888-874-4888. I always say that the Free Your Mind Friday feature of this program is important. It is also a part of the work that we do to build a community, and the community is built upon ideas and the exchange of information, opinions, and ideas. So we should be happy to connect. This is how we build our community. First up from Berkeley is Harvey. You're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Eutrice. How are you?
Great, wonderful Harvey. What's going on in your state with all those fires?
I know. In fact, I'm going to approach that in a kind of a strange way. But yes, the drought, the fires, it is climate destabilization brought on by our use of fossil fuels. And actually, you know, we're facing so many problems on the planet today, the overpopulation problem, and that being the reason for the dire straits we're in. It's the hottest year on record, droughts, as you say, ocean rise, refugee problems around the world. And I come to the conclusion that we need more space, and space is the place for space. And years and years ago, Isaac Asimov, a science fiction writer, suggested that we construct artificial moons that could offload some of the people from the Earth to these artificial moons, and they could circle the Earth. And I think that at that time it wasn't possible, but we're getting close. It's coming within our purview. So I can see a great way to diminish some of the population on Earth is to create artificial planets, and they can be built in space. And one way they can be built is the use of robots. And you know, we have drones now that, when they fly the drones, they put on special glasses, they look at the screen, and they can actually see. Well, imagine drone robots where whenever you turn your head, the robot turns its head, and whatever it sees, you see. And workers can be in flotation tanks working, in a sense, in outer space, putting together these moons. And also the materials could be refined in space, taken from other planets and asteroids, and made into the material to make these corporate moons. So you can have the Disney moon, the Hilton honeymoon moon, the General Electric moon, and of course, you know, you'll have your you're like in Star Wars, you'll have your dark star moon there. You'll have your, it's everything. It's everything that we are. But I believe that this is a concept that is viable. We need an easier way to get in space that's less expensive. I like myself. I like flywheel technology. I think there's hidden resources there, because flywheels have a very strange relationship to gravity, and maybe that can be exploited so that we can find an easy way to get into space and start getting our robots. I call them drone bots, to build these moons in space that'll help to relieve some of the population problem here on Earth. And also, you know, there's these planets called gypsy planets that aren't tied to a sun like our Earth is tied to the sun, and they roam space, so perhaps these moons could, it seems to be that's the aerodynamic shape that works in space. All things are roundish, all the planets and the moons, so everything that seems to move is round. So I think that these artificial moons that we're going to build would be perfect vehicles to start our exploration of space and become gypsy moons. So that's what I see, corporate moons coming up, and I want to thank you for letting me say it.
But before you go, give us an idea of how California is dealing with these fires, having destroyed almost 80,000 acres by now, and five people so far have been confirmed dead, and hundreds have lost their homes. What's happening? How is California dealing with it?
It's an unprecedented event happening up here. It's never been this dry, and the size of the fires and the lightning strikes and a variety of other reasons have created, it's really burning. And at the same time, I want to say that I believe I heard a program that said that we have 800 bases around the world, military bases. I would like to see some of those soldiers come home and start working on saving America by helping to put out those fires. We need those people back here. I mean, it's enough to, I know we're policing the world, and maybe it would have been worse if they weren't there, but I think it's time in our new electronic age to bring those people home and help secure our forests from fires and working with areas, because We've really destabilized the environment, climate destabilization with our use of fossil fuels, and that's where, you know, if you stand, put soldiers around the perimeter of America facing outward while the interior burns, you're not doing much. So I'd like to see our armed forces assist the local governments up here all through the western states in fighting these fires, because they're not over. They're just starting. The wood is dry, and we're not, you know, the moisture, and then it comes in flash floods, and what's happening, I heard talk that, you know, once these forests burn down, then when the flash floods come, they wash, there's no root system to hold the earth in place, and you get these floods of mud. It's just a terrible thing happening here. We need people to reseed the forests and move away from fossil fuels toward a solar future, because the way we're going here, California, it's a scary thing. It's all frightening. It's all frightening, and everyone, I believe everyone's under a lot of stress, because I know I am. I walked the dog outside, and all the trees that used to look green and everything that used to look green looks like it's dying for water. It's terrible, and every day passes. And here, if we get a little bit of water, we're so happy. But it's nothing. It's nothing. We're drawing and dying out here in California. And until things change, you know, our use of energy and just the whole concept of climate destabilization around the world, it's the biggest thing in newspapers now. You pick up a newspaper, it's not about war anymore. Sure, there's a scuffle here and there and a few here and there, but really the big ones are like drought in Brazil, São Paulo, no water for 20 million people. I mean, this is catastrophe beyond catastrophe, and we really have to focus on that. And I'm looking for our politicians to start focusing on something real rather than building a career. I mean, you must have children. You must have children. What life are they going to have? So that's, and that's one of the reasons I'm calling for corporate moons, is because of all this global catastrophe, you know. So that's the way I say, let's get solar, you wonderful you trees, and start turning this around.
Thank you so much for your call today. 888-874-4888. It is Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories, and we next hear from Dallas. Sarah, you're on the
greetings air. Greetings to you, you trees.
Thank you, and to you too. What have you to say today?
Yes, ma'am, and greetings to the PRN audience, you, Therese. I want to make
you.
Two quick. Yes, ma'am. I want to make two corrections to Harvey's statement that he made about the military needs to turn inward. That's what you have the National Guards for. The National Guard and the Reserve Forces, that is what they're supposed to be doing in each state because they are supposed to be protecting that state. So since the United States and another thing that they're doing, they're using prisoners as firefighters in California. So these prisoners are not trained firefighters, but they're putting them out there because they feel, okay, hey, you know, they're expendable. You can put them on the front line, have them go here and, you know, be firefighters. And if they get killed, oh, well, you know, these are a couple less people that you don't have to worry about. And also his statement about the U.S. military is overseas and maybe for the betterment. No, it's not. It's for the worst. Because everywhere the United States and her allies have set their foot, they have created that turmoil. All of this stuff that's going on with the refugee crisis in Europe, and all along North Africa and parts of Asia, it's because of the United States intervention. The United States needs to mind your own doggone business. If we're having all of these disasters in California and all around the country that you cannot take care of or you don't want to take care of internally, but yet still you want to go outside and meddle in other people's business and exacerbate it, make it worse than it is, it's none of your business. Most of these countries have been on this planet long before the United States was created, less than 240 years ago. So why do you think that you need to get involved? This is this white supremacist mentality where the white European male in particular feel that it's their right, their birthright, that they need to go around the globe and tell other people who are older than them what it is that they need to do. Let these people live how they have to live. If they want to fight and squabble amongst themselves, let them fight squabbles. They're eventually going to come to some sort of an agreement, and they'll move on as they've been doing thousands of years ago. You don't need to come in there and bomb them to oblivion and then call it a humanitarian mission. And then all of a sudden, now the same people caused the disaster. They're rushing back in there with so-called aid, trying to help. No, you're just helping yourself, or you're just helping a few people within which to start gobbling up the resources. That's what this is all about. It's not about them helping anybody. It's about help the corporations helping themselves. But I'm sorry, I'm kind of going off on a little rant because that's not really what I was calling in about you.
Just a little one, but that's okay. Let's go on. What is your focus today?
My main focus today, you treat is this congressional caucus dilution thing that they always put on in September. And to me, this little thing that they normally do, this, you know, excuse me for the audience who have sensitive ears, you know, I'm going to apologize in advance. This is more like a pimp whore convention that they're running in Washington, D.C. right about now, where the checks are going to be flowing. They're going to be writing checks. You know, the pimps are in town. They're going to be writing checks for their prostitutes in order for them to run out here and try and corral you and get you in line, trying to get you either on a Hillary Clinton or the Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden if he decides to throw his hat into this ring and make this circus indeed a three-ring circus. Because they serve absolutely no purpose. You know, every year they go through these things. They put on the show in D.C. Everybody run down there. They put it on all of these so-called black, you know, I've got to put this in air quotes, black, because I don't know what the heck is black media anymore. I don't even know if we have any left. But they run on down there. They focus on these people who dress up nice. And all they're worrying about is the president coming into town and what is he going to say, what speech is he going to make at their little gathering and, you know, all of the nonsense. In the meantime, they're spending all of this money. It's being spent on hotel, food, flour, and everything. And the people who are supplying the food, hotel, and flour, they don't look like me and you, Utrecht. Ain't nobody black in Washington, D.C. going to benefit from this whole fiasco that they are putting on. And then I had the misfortune of seeing a commercial by the head of the NAACP, Cornell Brooks, for Wells Fargo. Now, this is the same Wells Fargo that has put so many black people out of their homes in this country, especially in the Baltimore, the D.C., the DMV area, Maryland, D.C., and Virginia. And he was, and he made a commercial. You know, I have to pull up on PBS and I have to see that commercial yesterday. And I told me, turn my stomach. No, they were suing the previous NAACP president. What's his name? I kind of forgot the guy's name that left, you know, kind of in the middle of his tenure.
Jealous.
Ben Jealous. It kind of left. They were suing Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo decided to cut some deal on the table with them. All of a sudden, they pull out that lawsuit. No, here it is, the new president making a commercial for Wells Fargo. This is what we have as, for black people masquerading as black leadership when they're getting in bed with the same people that are oppressing their people and getting money from them in order to shut them the hell up.
And well, we'll see what this annual convention or this annual caucus weekend produces. But it is a, you know, I've talked about it a lot here, about the conciliatory, unnecessarily conciliatory tone of most of the Congressional Black Caucus conventions with the power structures that they ought to be fighting against. I mean, it is a sad thing, and I agree with you with that. So we'll see. We'll see how it happens.
It's not only that, Eutrice, I'm going to say this. And then, you know, what really gets on my nerve is when black people say, well, they can't do nothing. They are just a tiny bunch. There's only like 43 of them amongst this house of 535. What do you expect them to do? You know what I expect them to do, Eutrice? Don't put them in office. If your whole idea in voting is to say, okay, we're going to put black people in the office, but then once you put them there, you're going to turn around and then make an excuse for them. Well, they're just less than 1% or less than 10% of the whole body. They really can't do nothing. So why the hell did you vote for them in the first doggone place? Why did you put them in office if in the back of your mind you were saying that they are still in a minority, and they really can't do nothing? Why do we need them?
Well, thank you for your call today. It's so hard to tell how you feel.
Thank you.
Thank you. Rose from Queens, you're on the air.
Eutrice, I think it's poetic justice to have these hordes of Muslims coming over the border into Europe. And I'm part Syrian myself, Christian, just to put that out there. But I think that we did have an obligation to help the Syrians because they rose up peacefully. They were met with the brutality by Assad, a regime we called part of an axis of evil. We had sanctions on that regime for decades. And when the peace people actually, unlike Iraq, they never asked to be liberated with Shaka Noor. The Syrian people rose up peacefully at first. They were met with brutality. They asked us or anybody for help. And what did the West say? I remember Sarah Palin saying, Muslims killing Muslims. Let Allah sort it out and pass the popcorn. I read that all over the media. It was a big joke. And then Obama tried with that ultimatum, with the chemical weapons ultimatum. The right wing and the left in this country said they took it as a mark of real democracy that the right wing said we will not authorize the use of force. We will do nothing about this Hitler-like dictator gassing his own people. Let Allah sort it out. Muslims killing Muslims. What could be bad about that? This was the attitude. We did not authorize the use of force. Obama then did not, he went along with the democratic people's will to not do anything. And now 4 years later, after people have been crucified, children have been crucified, children have been beheaded, all the most horrible, unimaginable things are happening. And all we knew how to say was Muslims killing Muslims. Let Allah sort it out. It was a big joke till one day they beheaded some Westerners. Then and they went into our Iraq, quote unquote, because we fought and died there, even though they never asked us to fight and die there. And we installed a Shia government that we knew was going to persecute the Sunnis. And then we left. We had to leave. We did the right thing. We had no choice because they didn't want us there. And so then the Shia started persecuting the Sunnis, and ISIS then took hold because there was a vacuum in Syria, because the people were being slaughtered left and right, like unbelievable. So ISIS, a bunch of fanatics from everywhere, from the whole world, internet converts, all kinds of fanatics went there, formed ISIS, and then they still didn't care. ISIS was there for years. Finally, when they beheaded a Westerner in Iraq, then all of a sudden we woke up at about ISIS. And now the beauty of seeing hordes of these Muslims cross an exodus, a total exodus on a biblical scale, going to Europe. Now, it's not a big joke. They can't just say Muslims killing Muslims. Let Allah sort it out. So I think it's we the West brought it on ourselves. And Syria was one country that we had a moral obligation. When people rise up against a dictator that for decades we had sanctions on, and we call part of the axis of evil and all this, the minute they rise up, I thought we wanted them to rise up. The minute they rise up, we turn our backs on them and say, we're not going to help you. And
but so, Rose, let me ask you, the situation is that as many, while this exodus from Iraq, from Syria and Afghanistan and other places is happening, the European countries, the European Union countries, are shutting their borders down, and they don't seem to have a cogent plan to deal with the influx, the inflow. What do you say to that? What is the solution from your perspective?
Let them fix it themselves. We now have to fix it because they're going to fix us, so to speak, by coming in, which is what they're doing. It's poetic justice. We, the West, the U.S., the Europeans, we brought it on ourselves by not caring about the horrific situation that was going on there in Syria in one place, and by what we created over there in Iraq. We
deliberately,
I believe, installed a Shia government. Now it was payback time on the part of the Shia government against the Sunnis who had been, the tables were turned under Saddam. The Shias were being persecuted, and us, who supposedly went there, of course it had nothing to do with democracy, but what did we do? We maliciously installed a one-party government, although they had Kurds there too in the government, and we knew or should have known that they were going to then turn around and start persecuting the Sunnis, which is what happened.
We are clear. You have a very clear handle on the analysis of the causes of it, and I am not disputing that. What I'm asking is, just the same, no matter what the cause is, the fact is that there appears to be no real solution at this time, because apart from Germany committing to accepting up to $800,000 refugees, the other European Union countries are not, they basically are not interested, or they're not stepping forward with that level of generosity. The United States has said, well, we'll take 10,000, which is nothing. So it still boils down to the fact that the people who desperately need the help are not getting it, certainly. So what do you think should happen now?
We should right now. You have a human obligation to let people in. You have a human obligation to let people in when they are drowning in the seas and getting suffocated in trucks and getting beheaded by or battle bombed by Assad. I don't care who. Even if we had never had, even if we were pristine in our history regarding that area, even if we had never done a bad thing to those people ever, we still have a human obligation when there's a war and refugees, men, women, and children are fleeing the ravages of a horrific war. We take them all in. That's what we have an obligation. Number one, you take them in. Number two, you do what they begged us to do 4 years ago. Four years ago, we were already saying it's too late. Well, maybe we should have helped the Free Syrian Army, but we didn't. Oh well, that was all a lie too. We never wanted to help them. We had no problems with seeing them slaughter each other. The pundits were saying it, and they were saying it all over the media. They were laughing about it.
Well, thank you so much for your very strong opinion today. I really appreciate your call today, Rose. Thank you so much. From Los Angeles, DX, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrecht.
Hello, DX. What's up with you? What's going on in your life today? What are you talking about today?
Good morning from California, and I'd just like to say, after Rose and Sarah, I have to calm myself because I love my progressive brothers and sisters so much, and I have to, like, breathe a little bit because they get me so hyped up. And Sarah in particular, I love hearing her call in. She makes me laugh so hard sometimes, and she's on point. She's knowledgeable, but I appreciate it, but I have to calm myself for a second here. I wanted to also say that, as you know, last week I called in, and we had a really, really good conversation about health and things like that, and I think... Well, I know PRN was having some technical difficulties, so we were not being heard on the air. I know that. So I'd like to get back to that at some future date, maybe next week, because it was really, really a nice conversation. Don't you agree?
I agree very much so. It was an excellent conversation.
Right. So what
so what's on the menu today?
Yeah, what I wanted to do today is I wanted to just... put a little, couple of things out there for people to think about. I want to talk about negativity and positivity. And I'm going to get a little personal. I'm not going to go into too much detail. But there are some marvelous changes happening in my life right now. I really believe that sometimes we put obstacles in our own way. And one of the obstacles we put in there is we accept negativity from other people because we care about them, love them, and we just can't see that that negativity is blocking you from accepting the positive vibes and positive results from the universe, end quote. And I recently, well, let me start at the beginning. I know I haven't really told you a lot about myself as far as my personal upbringing and things like that, but I'm a very musical person, and I started playing drums, bass guitar, and guitar in church when I was 8 years old, and it's always been something that's very, very close to my heart. I play 7 instruments. I produce. I do things like that, and I got involved in the music business, and I've worked with some pretty big names and then some not-so-famous people. I won't go into that. It's a long story. But I got screwed over by a few people in the music industry, and I just got very, very tired of it and didn't want to participate really in it anymore. And the last major thing I was involved in was back in 1997. And since then, I've been doing my music and working with independent artists and things like that. And, well, what I really always wanted to do the last several years is get some young artists that I can really take to the top. And unfortunately, for the last 8 years, I was in a relationship, and the negative blockage was there. I won't go into too much about that. But it was just a negative dark cloud over me, and I won't blame it all on her, but, you know, it was finally... I came to the realization that it wasn't going to work, so we dissolved it, and we were living together. She moved out, you know, this was about a month ago, and then immediately after that, good things just started happening for me. And that's my point for the day, is that sometimes we can't see the forest for the trees, and we're holding on to something, and we're not really... seeing that there's blockage there. So, in a nutshell, about a week or so after she left and we broke up, I get a call from an unlikely source, and it's from, well, it eventually put me in contact with an amazing young vocalist, 24 years old, that's just amazing. I expect to be walking her up on the stage at the Grammys one day because she's just amazing. So we're doing some tracks now, positive, also at the, what happened the last
but
few
let me,
weeks.
Let me ask you, DX, this negativity, how much of it belonged to you?
Well, I respond to negativity with negativity, and I'm not, like I said, I wouldn't blame all of it on her. I just think it wasn't a good combination. And I respond to negativity with negativity, which I shouldn't do.
And is there in your mind that this response, this negative response to a negative stimulus, if you will, was itself blocking you? Did you find any way to undo it? Was this a conscious thing that you did?
Did I find any way to undo the negativity?
Yeah, on your part.
On my part, yes.
Yeah.
I started responding consciously in a more positive way, and it just so happened that there were things going on in her life, the job she had and all these things, that made her increasingly more cynical and over the last couple of years especially, and more negative. So no matter how positively I responded, it didn't do any good. And that's why I'm saying, you know, it was a negative cycle that was already deteriorated to even fix.
So where are you now? I mean, day to day, what is your mindset like, and how is it different from, say, a couple of months ago?
Yes, that's what I was getting to. I'm not saying her and I may not at some future date find this again, but it has to be on a positive note. And I'm trying to get to the point of what I'm learning from all of this, and that's what your question is, really. So I wanted to give a couple of examples of things that just started flowing through after the negativity sequence, the negativity cycle was gone. You know, so there's the singer working on some amazing tracks with a couple of other writers and a couple of other musicians. Also, I've been running a business since 1999. It's a publishing business, and yesterday, just out of the blue, I made a deal which equals the biggest deal that I've ever done in the 15 years I've been running it, but it's even better because it's a quarterly renewal for a whole year, so it's four times as good. So that came through. All of a sudden, at the same time, my son, a few days ago, who was looking for a job for 4 months, got a good job with benefits. He's only 16, so he got an amazing job for a 16-year-old. And I just think there was a dark cloud over my whole household, really. And there's been other little things since she left that have happened, too, that are good. I've met some amazing people that are really nice that I can talk to that have a positive energy and a positive vibe. So,
well, what I'm hearing, really, is that you are in the process of retooling your life. You're looking at life differently. Therefore, you placed yourself in a position to receive good things that are coming your way. It is quite possible that what you've been experiencing as a negative is just a combination of you just not being ready either to receive what was available. That was good because you're so locked into being negative. I'm not blaming you.
Right.
I'm just saying this is how your life might have. This is how it sounds that you kind of like on a treadmill, and so you're functioning on automatic, and you're functioning on automatic negative. So when you leave yourself open to receiving things that people want to give you, and then you're conscious of this. The possibility of such a relationship,
absolutely.
Your whole attitude changes, and then things change. Now it may
absolutely, and that's exactly what I was saying, Eutrice. Is that, well, like you just kind of pointed out, it's the whole preoccupation with the negative cycle that keeps you from receiving the positive things, people, and results that will come in your life if you just focus on that. And so it's about focus as well, but it's also about recognizing finally that this is a bad cycle and I need to get out of it. And so although I wasn't blaming everything on her, I mean it's like you said, it's a thing where you have to give up something that's someone in this case or something that you really, really care about and love, but it's for the greater good and for the advancement of your life. So, because I was just staying stagnant.
Well, you don't sound like you're stagnant anymore, nor do you sound like you will put up with stagnation of any sort anymore. So I'm glad to hear that. That's a great breakthrough that you've experienced, and congratulations. Keep it on the positive. You'll do really well. Thanks so much for your call today. Very inspiring. Thank you. Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Oh, good afternoon, Utrecht, and good afternoon to the PRN family. I was so happy
Thank
to
you.
Hear from Sarah. She has been missed.
Oh, yes. It's good to have her back
in fine
form.
Yes. You know, Utrecht, I don't even know where to begin. So I'm going to try and tackle a couple of issues, and I'm going to take them in order. I really enjoyed the program last week on glyphosate because coincidentally, you know, I've been eating organic food since 1995. I had read an article in Consumer Reports in 1995 that says you are what you eat. And I started reading that article, and from that day on, I started eating organic foods. But something interesting happened recently. I have a Whole Foods by my home, and there is an organization that puts out a list of fruits and vegetables that you must buy organic because of the absorption of herbicides and insecticides into the fruit. And so there's this list that I always have with me, and one of those items are grapes. So I go to Whole Foods to buy my organic grapes, and lo and behold, I see the grapes, and the grapes are on sale. They're usually very expensive, but $3.99 a pound, and lo and behold, they were on sale for $1.99 a pound. I buy about 5 pounds. This is the first week it was on sale. I bring the grapes home, I wash them, and I eat them, and they are absolutely delicious. So for the next literally 2 weeks, because they remained on sale for a long time, I went back and I went back and I purchased more and just ate more. And then last week, I see an article that talks about the fact that organic foods are being irrigated with fracking wastewater. Now, for those people who are not familiar with fracking uses water under high pressure to break up shale to release oil, and they have nothing to do with that water that's left over once the shale has been fracked. But now once that shale has been fracked, it releases all kinds of chemicals. And so what the companies have been doing is selling that wastewater for irrigation in California because of the drought. And they then proceed to list some brand fruits and vegetables that the farmers have been using this fracked wastewater on, and it's the very brand of grapes that I have just been consuming.
Oh,
I must
wow.
have consumed about, I mean, literally about, well, 15 to 20 pounds of these grapes. They were absolutely delicious. So what do? I am outraged. And I take all the articles and I make a packet and I write a terse letter to John Mackey, who is the CEO of Whole Foods in Texas, and I send it to him. I don't hear anything. So I'm in Whole Foods yesterday. Lo and behold, the organic grapes are there, but they're no longer in the branded packaging that the grapes that I was referencing. It's in this generic packaging that doesn't reference any company. In other words, now, so I'm standing there and I'm saying, are these the same grapes through the same company that they use this fracked irrigated water to irrigate the grapes, but they don't want anybody to know, so they're packaging it in generic packaging so you can't identify the company of origin. And so I share that with the PRN audience because, number one, I want them to know that even when you make a good faith effort to provide yourself with nutritious foods, you're not always able to be successful. as was in my case. So I just share, I just throw that out and share that because I mean, I thought, oh my God, here I am trying to do the best that I can for my health, and I'm still behind the eight ball.
So that's to hear from Whole Foods? And
I don't.
What would you do if you don't hear from Whole Foods?
The next thing that I will do is put something on their Facebook website. I mean, in my letter, I said to him that I would know that I have not purchased any more grapes, and I would not purchase any more grapes. And I didn't think anyone would purchase the grapes if they knew that the grapes were being irrigated with fracking water, which is why I think they changed the packaging. And I'm going to give them about 2 weeks to respond. And if I don't hear anything from them, it's going on their Facebook page.
And I know you mean it.
Oh, I do mean it. Oh, I do mean it.
Oh, you do.
I'm dead serious.
Yes, indeed.
Then the second thing that I wanted to talk about was that Republican debate. Utrecht, did you upchuck?
Well, I didn't even chuck. I refuse to watch it because, as I said yesterday, I will not. I just absolutely refuse in 2015 to watch to any program that clearly is indicating that I am not welcome there. It was an almost all-white affair.
Well,
as these debates tend to be, and everybody seems to be okay with it. From the hosts to the participants in the debate to the media organizations, nobody seemed it seemed not to bother anybody that a national event to determine the outcome of a national election is in 2015 still remains an almost all white affair. So the minute I saw that, I said, well, I'm done. I'm out of here.
Well, I was curious and I said, let me give it a shot. Well, Utrecht, after the first 10 minutes when the focus was on the person, Donald Trump, as opposed to the issues and the policies, I said to myself, I listened for a little bit longer, and I heard about women's rights, and I heard about immigrants' rights, and I heard about gay rights, and I heard about Muslim homophobia, and I said, well, where's Black Lives Matter rights? And so after about, I mean, I didn't really give it a good faith shot, as curious as I was, but the issue I want to raise is that that's the Republican debate. Well, you know, I expect the Democratic debate is going to be similar. But the problem that I now have is that when you read all of these pundit articles, people are saying, well, Bernie Sanders is leading Hillary Clinton, but, you know, those are mostly white intellectuals in Vermont and New Hampshire. Wait until he runs into states like South Carolina with large African-American populations, where Hillary Clinton is ahead by 30, 40, whatever number of points. And I want to say to those black people in South Carolina, because all the pundits are saying Hillary will be the nominee because you know who's going to put her over the top? Black folks. And you want to know something? They're absolutely correct. Black folks are going to put Hillary Clinton over the top. And it is if they absolutely have no sense of, I know who she is. I know what she's done. And in spite of I know who she is, I'm going to put her over the top anyway. So there is something very wrong with us, within us. You know, Malcolm talked about education before. But there is something that we are just, that this is not clicking. It's just not clicking. Because the evidence is in front of them. It's like they know they're being head to the slaughter, but they just don't know how to back up. I am just beside myself. I don't even know what to do.
We just have to keep on. We just have to keep on keeping on, as they say. Thank you so much, Patricia, for your great call today.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. We go to Aruba next. Jose, you're on the air.
Hey, sis, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Yeah, I just, you're a lot closer than I. I just have a bunch of questions maybe you can help me with. Okay, in October, I understand, according to newspapers, that you're going to have another Million Man March?
I don't know.
Okay, well, I can't quote the article, but October 10th, Minister Farrakhan is having another Million Man March. But what happened to the first? What was the political capital we got out of the first Million Man March, outside of symbolism?
Good question.
Yeah, you know, I know, here, I have it around here somewhere. Justice or else? Or else? Are you serious? You selling wolf tickets? What's going to be done? Like, I don't know any demands. Like, maybe there are demands. Like, I don't see a demand saying that there should be an indictment for this or that police officer. Or the woman, the man who arrested Sandra Bland, should be having assault charges waged against him for a traffic violation, not a law. He's going to tase this woman. Right? And two, the Nation of Islam has always had a formation, what do you call it, the Feud of Islam. Why is he calling for 10,000 black men? He has the formation to carry that through. What's the plan, if you can tell me?
Well, I don't know what the plan is, except that this is the organization that had conducted the first Million Man March. It was quite impressive. In fact, more than a million people showed up. I suppose it would be of interest. I will look into it to find out what's the plan for this Million Man March. And that would be an interesting thing to do. So I'll do that.
Before I leave, I'm on roaming charges. But in 95, that was a protest to protest ourselves. Is anybody speaking to that?
Well, I'm sure that there might be people who are. We haven't been discussing that on this program. Maybe something that we need to look at.
All right. Anyway, I gotta go. You know, I'm on roaming charges right now, so we'll speak when I get back to the U.S.
Thank you, Ose, for your call. From New York, Ali, you're on the air.
Hi, Idris. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well. I just wanted to say that Patricia and myself, we live about 8 blocks away from each other, so I did... We, before I went on vacation, we met at Whole Foods, and we were surprised that we lived so close to each other. So we made a day that we're going to meet and talk. So
great,
I just
great.
Wanted to say that. And then also, Jose, yes, there will be a march on October 10th, just or what else. Yesterday was a 4-year anniversary of Occupy Wall Street, so that was at the park the whole day. And some member of the Louis Farrakhan team, they came and they gave a little lecture, very, you know, short. But unfortunately, I stepped away and I didn't hear what the gentleman had to say, but I heard he was very powerful. So Jose could go to YouTube and just enter, and he might be able to see him give you a little speech about the demands and other things. But it will be October 10th. Is Justin or what else going to Washington, D.C.? But the reason that I called today is because I wanted to talk about something that Harvey said. I love Harvey, and I love when Harvey talks about, you know, the space, the environment, and all that. But today, like Zahra said, he said something that struck me. He said that the United States is like policing the whole world, and maybe if they didn't do a thing, it would be worse. But I will have to say, he will have to talk to the people from Chile, from Argentina, from Guatemala, Honduras, the whole Latin American, how this country, this government had done so much damage to those countries, especially right now about Venezuela and Colombia. But that's, you know, I just wanted to mention that because putting it together with that professor that you have on Tuesday, Professor Kraut, I think is his last name was.
Kraut.
And when you
yes.
were, yeah, Kraut, you were pressuring him about, I felt like you were pressuring him a little bit to come a little bit cleaner. But this is a professor that I wanted to know if he's teaching the right thing in his university, because one of the things that I couldn't believe that he was saying was that he didn't want to accept that United States and the European Union had actually gone to the Middle East. And that is the reason that these people, these immigrants, are crossing into Europe, trying to leave those countries, Iraq, Syria, Libya. He didn't want to accept what you mentioned during your conversation, that the reason that these people are crossing is the devastation that the United States with the European Union had done into those countries. What he said, he was talking to you, telling you Jordan and Saudi Arabia, they should do more, they should do more. And he didn't want to accept the fact and tell the truth about why these people are going into Europe, risking their life and even drowning with their kids. It's just like, when I was listening to that conversation that you were having with him, and this is what is happening in this country with the media. They don't tell the truth. And here is a university professor going into the radio, not telling the truth about what is happening in those countries.
I'm glad you picked up on that because, and that's why I pressed him several times and gave him the opportunity several times to make that connection. That what we are witnessing is the consequence of European involvement, and in a very bad way, in these countries and the West in general, with imperialist and colonialist adventurism in these countries and creating incredible havoc. And you see people who are literally taking a huge risk with their lives simply to escape the intolerable conditions that prevail in their countries now, case in point being Syria. And you're right. Every time I tried to nail him on it, but I knew that astute listeners like you would have picked up on that.
Okay. Thank you very much for listening to me.
Thank you for your call. We have a little bit of time left. Marcus from Maryland, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrice. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
And hello to the PRN audience as well. I've been listening to your show for a number of years, and I'm always informed about something, no matter what the topic is.
Thank you.
I think Sarah in Dallas, she has a brilliant ability to analyze things, and you know, perhaps she might want to maybe see if she can get a show on the PRN. But anyway, you know, Utrice, no matter how much you inform us about what is going on, I don't think we've reached that critical mass yet where people are going to do something about it. And I honestly don't think that people in the Maine are going to do something about it until, you know, the proverbial hits the fan. I mean, what would it take? What more does it take for people to wake up to a corrupt political system, a corrupt global system? I really don't see any way out of this. I hate to sound pessimistic, but honestly, Utrice, I really don't see any way out of this. I'm just putting this out there. Maybe somebody has an idea. I'm open to it.
Well, I think, you know, we tend to believe that the moment that we're in is all that there is. And when we examine history, we see people have been in really desperate situations before we were even born, and they had to deal with it. So it's just our turn, and we have to deal with what we've got. The expectation is that, well, people will get the point and will act on it, and we will, you know, see a reasonably timely response. But life doesn't work that way. So part of the whole business is the expectation that people would be moved into action, we have to be more realistic about that. It's the education process, and it's a gradual process. Sometimes, and we've seen it in recent years, where the situation is just so stark that people had no choice but to react, and they did. Why we think people ought to be acting faster and reacting faster on some things, I don't know how to control that. We have no control over that. All we can do is engage in the process of education and giving people the information that they need that would help inform their decisions and ultimately inform their actions.
That's true, Eutrice, but let me say, we may have been in situations like this before, broadly speaking, but we've never been in situations before. I mean, look at what's going on in Syria. Syria has the makings of being the match that lights off World War III, because you have both Russian and American forces very close to each other. There are people who are saying, even on this network, that we are that close to a global catastrophe, the likes of which would make even the Great Depression of the 1920s look like a Saturday afternoon at Disney World. We may have faced grave circumstances before, but it seems as though the stakes are much higher. And if something wrong happens, then the consequences could be catastrophic in ways that they weren't before.
Well, when you talk about catastrophe, there's no point in measuring the degree of severity. A catastrophe is a catastrophe, period. So,
yes.
As I said, when things happened before, people just had, and this is part of the human story, you have to go through them.
Yes.
We are in a really dicey situation. Everybody recognizes that. But people are reacting differently, and there's no way to compel people to observe the same time frame. People have to digest things. They have to learn about things in their own way. It takes time in some cases. For others, it doesn't. So those who are impelled to action are doing that, and those who are still in the process of learning are doing that, and those who intend to do nothing are also doing that. That's the story of human nature.
So it seems. But at any rate, I do thank you for the show, Eutrice. And again, I wish you good health and success in the future.
Thank you so much, Marcus, for your call. Enjoyed talking with you today. And that brings us to the end of our program. Thank you so much for all of your wonderful, wonderful ideas and your thoughts and the information that you share. And you share so confidently and so respectfully. And I really always take note of the fact that you take the time to greet members of the audience. That is very, very nice of you to do. Thank you so much. Keep it right here. Coming up next, the Lifeboat Hour with Carolyn Baker. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Have yourselves a great weekend. Surround yourselves with people who bring positive vibes and dimension to your life. And do what DX said he did. Just avoid negativity at all costs. And we'll see each other on Monday. Bye-bye.
On a trip. He don't have a pad, he didn't know his dad. His temper is bad, so don't get him mad. But all the time you hear the women really hollering his name, Filthy McNasty. He once got his kicks by putting on hicks, a square kind of chicks went wise to his licks. Well, those days are gone, he carries right on with his line of corn, he's still a Don Juan. And all the time you hear the women really screaming his name, Filthy McNasty. He's gained lots of fame.